This is Description, episode 73, for September 8th, 2009, with material recorded August 29th, 30th, and 31st.
What do you mean gravy on my fries?
It was the other way around.
What are you talking about? Is this a joke that you pull on Americans? Like, what is this business?
Welcome to Description, Valerie in Toronto. Hello, I'm Valerie, and I'm really not in Toronto. First, I'll explain my voice. partially, it's because I think I'm starting to have a cold, which will happen when you're in the middle of a bunch of stuff happening. That's one of the family dogs. There's a hint. Barking I just heard in the distance. Also, my voice sounds like this because I just woke up. So, there you go. I am on my bed in my room in the house where I grew up in Kingsville, Ohio. I am here because if you might remember a couple episodes ago, well, in two episodes, kind of like a little thing at the end of one, and then talked more in detail in the other about the fact that I was adopted, you know that, and when I was a baby, and that in June, this past June, I happened to be home, and through a series of events, found that somebody was looking for me, and it was the sister of a person who eventually we all learned is my birth mother. And so there are two particularly striking things about this situation. One, that her dad, my birth mother's dad, worked with my dad at the plant over in Ashtabula for quite a long time. And no one was the wiser of anything. I think my stomach just rumbled. The other thing that's rather striking is that my birth mother is also a dual citizen of the U.S. and Canada. through a series of events that I'm hoping are going to be explained later in this episode. That's pretty much what this episode is about, pretty much. I've been home here since last
Wednesday.
And it is now Monday morning. And not only has my birth mother come from the Maritimes, but her sister, the woman who found me, basically, who got the information, has come up from Florida. Another sister is already here, living in the area, as is their mother, who married to the guy who worked with my dad, who is unfortunately dead. He passed away about 2-3 years ago. So she's here, and also a brother and his wife and his son came down from Alaska to visit with family, which also seems to now include me. So part of why I may have a cold and a rough throat right now is the fact that I've been spending the last 3-4 days doing pretty much nothing but hanging out with these people and eating and talking about the next time we're going to get together and eat or do something, and then driving to that place and with different cars, and it's been a bit chaotic and far more social than I ever am, but it's been pretty amazing. There are all these people, and then there are their kids, and then there are cousins, and then there are brothers and aunts and uncles, and I've crossed paths with a fair bit of them now. And hopefully we'll be able to snatch some time of just us two, birth mother and I, where we're able to talk. Because I talked to her about this before I got here, saying, I wonder if we could talk for the podcast. I know there are a lot of things you'd like to hear about from us too, but I'd kind of like to keep in focus of the show. I talked about the greater issues of this in what it's meant in greater, although not precise, detail when I did the first Walk in the Walk show. So you can go back to that. And there may be other talks about this later, about this subject. So if you're not fulfilled by this part of the story, just hang in there. There'll probably be more. But what I kind of wanted to focus on was to keep it in the vein of this show, which is about, you know, Canada and explaining things about Canada, usually explaining things about Canada to Americans. And that, the origin of that was me spending a lot of my life explaining certain things about Canada to my folks here. Well, meanwhile, in parallel universe here, my birth mother has kind of been doing the same to her family. Why I decided to record this now to tell you this stuff, just after waking up, so my mouth probably sounds really bad right now, having not drunk any water whatsoever. More, I got morning mouth here. Is, as I woke up here, you know, thoughts have been flying through my head. And one thought that just flew through my head was that, this idea of being a dual citizen. And, you know, having kind of a home country and then having a home country, you know. And possibly loyalties being divided, but that's not exactly the point. It's just having an additional loyalty or something. And so now I realize this morning that I'm not just a dual citizen of two countries. I'm a dual citizen of two families. Getting a little misty at the moment. So I've been spending a little time in that other country for a while, this other family for a while. And now, you know, she has talked to my folks, you know, that my folks have been, they keep getting invited to these events of that involve food, these big dinners and whatever, and they come. And, so they've gotten an idea what these people are like, and these people, the other family, have gotten some idea what they're like. And so I'm learning about these different family countries I'm a citizen of. And she is pretty much too. So we're dual citizens in a couple different ways. So, that's what I've got right now. let's see what kind of time we can carve out of all of this, running around to, talk about dual citizenship in countries as well with my birth mother.
Hello.
Hello, Valerie.
And this is, what I've been, who I've been referring to as the birth mother. this is my birth mother.
That's me.
And we are in the relatively new home of the birth mother's mother in a complex of bungalows and things outside of Ashtabula, Ohio. That I can say that much. And we're in a good, peaceful nexus kind of spot in between all sorts of other things that have been going on for the last few days.
And it's very quiet here.
it is atypically quiet yeah. for what's been going on for the last little while. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd be able to, we have the opportunity now to talk about this. Everybody pretty much knows my story of coming up to Canada. And so I wanted to know more about your journey to Canada. First mm-hmm. off, when it happened, where you were, and more importantly, really, what was going through your head, why there, and so what mentally got you to that place, both in terms of circumstances, like why there as opposed to anywhere else, and, you know, where you were at.
Hmm. I guess I was doing a lot of wandering throughout the United States, and it ended up in Western, in California. Hmm. And then moving my way up the coast, mm-hmm. it seemed more and more civilized the more north you went, away from L.A. and Hollywood. And clearly this was, we're talking 1970, 71, 72.
Okay.
Had been through an earthquake in L.A., which is pretty scary. I think I'd gone back to New York and come back to California, and then I was actually living in Northern California. No, before I went to Northern California, I was living in San Francisco.
Okay.
And this is during the war, and if you remember the book Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was a seminal, you know, book for a lot of us at that time.
Okay.
And I read the book, and at the same time, I think it was about the time of the My Lai massacres in Vietnam.
Could you also really quickly give a quick rundown of, for anyone who has never heard of that book before, of Bear My Heart at Wounded Knee?
Well, it was by, I don't remember his last name, D.
Because I don't know either.
Yeah, I don't remember either. And it was really the story of the march. Were they Sioux? I can't remember exactly.
Okay.
This has been, you know, 40-some years ago since I read it. Some of the massacres, the Long March, I think it was called the March of the Long Knives or something like that.
Right.
And which eventually led to a massacre of hundreds and hundreds of Native people. And like I said, I think they were Sioux. But there was an incident in there that was remarked where, and this is very difficult, but where one of the fighters had taken had scalped a woman, but had scalped her pubic hair.
Wow, okay.
And essentially these were army
okay,
soldiers.
Yeah.
They were,
all
right. That's right, they were. They would have been, I think. That image, needless to say, I mean, how could it not affect you?
Oh, sure.
And yes. How can you not feel somewhat responsible, you know, in a way, part of the system that, you know, that has continued, let's say. That,
yeah, it's more, so what made that book so significant, as if it was already significant in and of itself, but so heavy contextually in terms of what was going on at the time.
Mm-hmm. Because the same thing, there would have been the same reportage had come from Vietnam.
Okay.
The same exact mutilation.
Okay.
And, you know, my head couldn't put, I had a difficult containing like what you do with that kind of information and the emotions and the guilt that, you know, you can feel. And I was living in San Francisco at the time, and, you know, it was just a fairly opulent city at the time. It was booming, and I was working, doing temp work at the Bank of America. And I was just feeling like shit.
Mm.
And I just didn't know how to handle my feelings about the war anymore. I was working, I was paying taxes. You know, they're taken automatically out of your pay. You know, it's not as though, yeah, I refuse to pay my taxes at the end of the year.
Yep.
I mean, they're taken every day out of your friggin' pay, right? And so it was entirely an emotional impulse that I cannot live here any longer. Okay. It was entirely emotional driven. And then the other little thing I told you, I think I mentioned to you before, that I was at the Bank of America building probably only for a few weeks. This all happened. It just kind of went bam, bam, bam in my mind. Okay. And, well, in real time. I mean, that I was talking to somebody in the bank building, and I was working on a fairly high floor. And it was kind of disgusting because there was all these big windows, and you would look down, and I felt really shaky. You know what I mean? I felt like I wasn't on firm ground emotionally and even physically.
Like you had some sort of a moral vertigo.
Yeah, absolutely. Moral vertigo. Exactly. Okay. Immoral vertigo. I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody about the building, and he was bragging up the fact, like you stand in, you're in one of these large buildings, and you look down, and they're surrounded by plazas.
Yeah.
You know, huge plazas where people walk back and forth, going from one place to another. Mm-hmm. And we're standing there looking down, and I said something about earthquake. And he goes, you don't have to worry about this building, because it's been earthquake-proof. And it was covered in marble slabs. And if there were an earthquake, the building, they would relieve pressure, because the building would throw off the marble slabs, which would crash to the plaza below. Hence bonking the head of and crushing to bit anyone who happened to be walking below it.
Wow.
And that was so symbolic, because the Bank of America itself at the time was very, very symbolic about the world dominance of the United States. And so I just felt so totally creeped out that I just said, I've got to get out of here. And I was had been getting out of there in a variety of ways, like going to live in tent cities in the forest and, you know, leaving larger town to smaller town, just trying to find my way so that I could felt comfortable in my skin living in the country. And I couldn't do it anymore. And I knew that I had a great aunt and uncle that lived in Canada. And at the time, needless to say, we all knew that a lot of draft dodgers were going to Canada. I, to be totally honest, knew nothing about Canada. To a certain extent, I probably saw it as a, you know, I mean, I knew that the language, you know, there was English and French. I had been to Toronto as a child, you know. I've been to Niagara Falls on both sides, let's say. Mm-hmm. Never been to Toronto. No, I've been by Toronto. I had been on the Queen Elizabeth Highway.
Okay, yeah.
And it seemed like a safe and somehow more, well, safe, really, in a variety of ways.
That was just the general impression you were getting from what little you,
It was a safe place to go to, and that it was somewhat more open and liberal. Mm-hmm. And really, a lot of it was just, I'd heard Vancouver was a very groovy place. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, well, this would be great. And so I left. We put all our belongings in the back of a car. A friend of mine, Joanne, who was from Brooklyn, I think, and drove up in some, needless to say, small kind of car that was packed with everything, including a dog, I think. And we left from Port Angeles, which takes you on a ferry. And dumps you at the foot of the apartment buildings. I mean, yeah, apartment buildings in Victoria.
In Victoria.
Yeah,
okay.
The legislature building.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right there. Very in the
symbolic,
heart of it.
I know.
Right there. Phew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know the exact day, but it would have been late fall because I voted before I left. Mm-hmm. Because this would have been Richard Nixon's second election.
Yeah.
And it was a fait accompli. I mean, we knew that he was coming in a second time. And I had probably done some stumping for, I guess it was McGovern.
McGovern, sure. Because when I was that age, I was rooting for McGovern when I was four.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Well, yeah, I had, you know, I'd...
There's nothing I could do. So
I had done a little work, you know, we all had done a little work. And then I just said, I'm going. I voted as soon as I could vote, you know, which is likely a few weeks before, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. So
okay,
that would have been 72.
So it would have been November-ish.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. November 72.
Got it.
And landed in Victoria. My relatives, who were very elderly, I lived in Oak Bay, which is like the English enclave, you know, very, very middle class.
As if Victoria could get Englisher.
Yeah.
Well, this was the Englishest.
Englishestest. And so us two kind of hippie girls, you know, land hit there with a dog and all of our belongings. And they, you know, welcomed us and, you know, gave us dinner. And we kind of, we spent one night with them. And then we said, well, we're going to go over to Vancouver and check it out. And then, like, I never talked to them again. We just got to Vancouver and just made it happen. Those were the days when you would just go by the health food store, and there would be...
She just made quote marks.
Sorry.
Health food store.
The health food store on 4th, which was a very famous Lifestream health food store. And there were all numerous signs up outside of people looking for roommates. Mm-hmm. So within, like, an hour of, you know, arriving... we managed to find a place to stay, a communal house.
Within an hour of arriving.
Essentially. You know, I'm probably exaggerating because I have that tendency.
But, you know.
But, yeah, within that. Okay. And immediately there did feel to be a difference in my skin. And that has never changed.
Hmm.
It has only grown.
Yeah.
And we've spoken recently about snobbery.
Yeah.
Canadian. And I've absorbed some of that. I was there, let's say, because right now we're not here. Because we're here, which is in the United States. But in Canada, I was illegal and was forced to leave for a fairly short period just in order to make some money. And so I had to sneak back down into Seattle and worked for a month maybe to make some money. And then I got a job selling Georgia Straits in the street, which I am the world's worst salesperson. You don't know that about me, but I cannot sell a thing.
That may also be another thing that I got from you.
Yeah, I couldn't sell myself out of a paper bag.
Yeah, me too.
And luckily enough... I had done all kinds of secretarial work in the past. That's generally what I did, was a legal secretary. And I went into the office at the Georgia Strait, which had been the underground newspaper at that point. It was politics and entertainment.
Just in case for anyone who is not Canadian listening, this is in Vancouver,
yes.
as opposed to Seattle.
Yeah.
Georgia Strait has long been the... Yeah. You know, free independent paper of Vancouver.
Yeah. And it was much dirtier in those days. Politics
how
used to get into trouble. Well.
Wait a minute. First off, politics was dirtier in Vancouver back then?
Let's say that...
I'm not going to say anything more about that because Vancouver will go, you're from Toronto, so you're not allowed to say anything like that. But I'm just saying.
Well, I think they were, you know, the newspaper did not try to be polite in any way, shape,
right,
or form.
Yeah.
And so it called it the way it was. And upstairs was the newspaper and downstairs was like the head shop.
Aha. Yeah,
Do we need to explain what a head shop is?
No, because I don't think that's specific to Canada exactly.
Yes, okay. But it was also a comic book store.
Cool.
Because in those days, there were underground comic books like Young Lost and Harold Head and, the Furry Freak Brothers and all of those. And so I would sell those. And it was part of my job was to run the head shop, work in the head shop. And upstairs, I got a job typesetting the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in a communal house. I'd work in town a few days a week, and then I lived on Pender Island, which is a little Gulf Stream island.
Yeah.
And I lived in a communal house out there for quite a while, which was really nice, riding a ferry back and forth twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then moved into a communal house in Kitsilano, which was then and still is a wonderful place to live.
That's what I hear.
Off of 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And lived in a communal house with Jackie and Peter and... George, who has turned into my life partner.
Mm-hmm.
And probably after I had been in Vancouver for 6 months to a year, an amnesty was declared.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they would declare these amnesty for, essentially for draft dodgers, people that had come to the country illegally, but whom hopefully had not broken any laws or were not criminals on the run or something
hopefully
like that.
Hopefully you hadn't broken any laws, you kids. No. We hope you haven't done anything.
So they would declare an amnesty and you could go in and apply for landed immigrants. Status, landed immigrancy status, whatever it would be called.
Yeah, whatever it was that.
And it was just a matter of formality unless you had some kind of skeleton in the closet.
Wow.
And luckily, and I never had a skeleton in the closet before that. Although afterwards I did. And I didn't have to go under the age, under George or anything like that. It was just my own status.
Yeah, it was independent.
Became an immigrant, and then I was an immigrant for maybe 10 to 15 years before, when I was in Halifax, decided to, because I wanted to vote.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was right to live in a country and not participate, because I believe in complaining. So I thought, you can't complain unless you... Kind of, I feel that way. Sometimes I don't, because it doesn't really matter anyways. Sometimes. When you're faced with some of the choices that we've had, especially in the last
year. It's a frustrating, frustrating thing, but just, still, gotta...
I still felt that I wanted...
Yep.
What is that word?
What is it?
Franchisement.
Oh.
The right to vote. I think it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're disenfranchised if you can, so you're franchised if you can. So,
which in America means a completely different thing.
Exactly. Okay. So I became living in Halifax in co-op housing.
Let's back up a second here. Yeah. We've got to get you from BC to Halifax.
Well, I thought we were just focusing on my status to become a Canadian.
No, that's true. Okay, yeah.
There's a lot of miles between those two places.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead, sorry.
So fast forward to... Halifax, where we actually ended up settling in New Brunswick from BC.
Mm-hmm.
Lived in BC for a few years.
Right.
And then settled in New Brunswick because that's where my partner George was from, right along the St. John River.
Right.
And our idea was to come back and buy a bunch of land, and we were back to the Landers.
Yep.
Left the city life, and we're going to be back to the Landers. And tried that for a while, and they got really bored.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to Halifax, and where we'd live part of the year. We'd live in the wintertime and work and save money, and then we'd move to this little cabin we had built in the summertime in New Brunswick, and which was pretty ideal in many ways. Got involved in a lot of political stuff in Halifax, both anti-war stuff and feminist stuff, and feminist anti-war stuff. They were... affinity groups, we used to call them in those days. I was in an affinity group called the Spinsters.
Okay.
Yeah. And at a certain point, I guess it was, I don't remember exactly the year, unfortunately, because I was asked this recently because I lost my papers. I don't know what year I became a citizen. But all I do remember was that I had to do some paperwork. I went into an office and sat and spoke to whatever kind of classified person it was that gave you the test.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an oral test.
Yep. And for me it was written.
Yeah.
And for you it was oral, right?
Yeah, it was an oral test. And I think I got one thing wrong.
I can't remember what it was. I think I got one thing wrong too.
It's kind of like taking a driver's test.
Yeah.
You know, it was about that level of, I wasn't really worried about it or anything. And I probably should have been, but it was fine. And then the next court, court happened. And it was pretty cool. There was a lot of people there. But in those days in Halifax, there really weren't a lot of immigrants from Asia or any place really interesting. It seemed to be a lot of us white gals from someplace not so interesting. And I've always thought it was kind of interesting to, I'm an immigrant and I could kind of like join the immigrant support group. But I'm unlike...
I see that in Toronto, and I'm like, we don't fit, do we? No.
We need a support group for...
Well, now we have one.
Now we have one. Yes, we do. It's a pretty small but intimate and very good support
group. Yes, I would recommend it highly, but no one else is allowed.
Yeah. And I can't foresee a time. People say, you know, well, so, you know, move back here to the States when you retire, or, you know, don't you miss it? And, you know, there are things I absolutely do like about the United States. There are definite things. There's just kind of a dynamism, yeah, dynamism that kind of happens somehow that you can get swept away with. It's kind of cool. There's this entrepreneurial kind of spirit. There's just a few things that I think, you know, are okay. I would say to some extent there's a lot more restaurants.
That's much true.
More than Woodstock, let's say, New Brunswick.
Yeah.
Okay. There's just a few things, you know, there's just like more of stuff. And then I'm so happy not to have the more of stuff most of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm absolutely glad that I live in a place where I live, actually in a small town, right? So it is, you know, more peaceful and more quiet, and I don't have a million choices of stupid things I don't want to get anyways or do. And there's no major distractions. You know, I come down here and I get utterly exhausted by life that's actually fairly similar to outside of Toronto. The whole thing that you call it around Toronto.
The GTA.
Mississauga. I mean, suburbs. Just like all that stuff, all the malls.
Oh, and, yeah.
Like, I don't have that where I live.
See,
and I get utterly exhausted by driving down these avenues with one fast food restaurant after another.
Yeah, it's a whole other distinction that I've discussed with other people between suburbs and urban, being in the middle of a city and being in a suburb. Talk about your disconnect. So, yeah, just that in itself is a switch. But even when I, you know, lived in Toronto initially and then for a fair span of time, and then I remember one time, maybe one of the first times I would drive back home while I was in university, I remember stopping off for gas in Buffalo and North Ogden and seeing 5 grades of gas. It's like, what? Why? Who needs 5 grades of gas?
Yeah.
And it was just that. And that's from coming from Toronto in the mid-80s. And going to the convenience store and like, walls of what? And going back to the grocery store and there would be beer and there'd be booze and there, but mainly there would be all this stuff. Of different kinds. Like,
stuff.
Do we need 4 different kinds of pork rinds? Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. So even...
Especially pork rinds.
Are you kidding? Even in comparison... So even in comparison with living in an urban area in Toronto that's got a lot of its own share of things and stuff, possibly your highest level per capita of things and stuff in Canada...
Mm-hmm.
Even then, you come back here, not necessarily in an urban place, and you still have that consumerist culture shock.
Yeah.
When you first moved, well, you were so full of everything else. What else was going on around you? What would you say was like the thing, a thing that? Oh wow, they don't have that here. Damn. God, I wish I could go back and get that. Was there anything like that?
No, it was the opposite. It was like, what do you mean gravy on my fries?
It was the other way around.
What are you talking about? Is this a joke that you pull on Americans? Like, what is this business?
And
you've got to be kidding about the cheese curds.
That was even before you got to the poutine. Yeah,
before
no kidding.
I got to the poutine.
Well, when I first heard of it, I was like, I can't believe Americans did not come up with this. How could Americans not have come up with this? I think they're ignoring it out of jealousy. Because if anyone is going to come up with something that involves cheese and fried things and gravy, wouldn't it be Americans?
I would guess so.
But no.
I would guess so.
So all that I missed was when I was SportsCenter on ESPN, Kurt Loder on MTV, and Hostess Ho-Ho's, which we walked past just 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. But it was just these little things. And
Mexican food.
See, I never was that.
See, I used to live in Southern California.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly.
And
there you go.
That's all we ate. I mean, that's what we ate. It was Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
And so going to Canada, I mean, I know now there's Mexican food in Canada. but not in New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. Not really. And yeah, so I miss the Hispanic influence, mm-hmm. you know, and the other thing that I found really important about the difference between the two countries,
okay.
I don't know if I can articulate this, is the presence of Aboriginal people.
Oh, good. Oh, you know, yeah.
In the United States, there aren't any. I mean, really, unless you go to the South, and I'm apologizing if I'm, you know, saying anything bizarre, but, you know, growing up here, mm-hmm. You know, I was not influenced at all by any First Nations culture.
The Aboriginal, well, the American Indian culture
they?
Here is pretty much nil.
Or at least, unless you go out west.
You got, yeah.
Unless you go but, I mean, out where, to the Southwest.
But here. In, you know, Erie for you growing absolutely. Up and Kingsville for me growing up in this area. Yeah. Nothing.
They've been wiped.
You didn't notice anything.
The slate, or whatever you want to call it, has been wiped clean. There's no kind of history. There's, you know, when I would come back after living in Canada for a few years, you know, after, you know, moving to Canada, wherever you are in Canada, you are aware of the First Nations community that lives where you are.
Yes.
And if you're at all interested, you will learn history.
Yeah.
And you will find out, you know,
but at the very least.
The United States? I asked people after I used to come back, and I said to my mother, well, you know, what were the names of the tribes that used to live here? Well, where were they living?
We only learned that in eighth grade Ohio history.
Oh, did you study? Oh, well, then there's those mounds. You know,
yeah,
I would love to go there someday.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah, but that's the only really place important. I ever knew that I'd ever heard they existed. And then, like most other things I learned in school, it went out the other side of my head.
So that's, to me, that is sad. That's a lack.
Yeah.
But there is a very, when you look at the politics, you know, when you look at Canada, anything that goes on in Canada, at some level, there better be something speaking to Aboriginal issues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Even if we're talking of something as shallow as having somebody drumming at a ceremony for the government, you know, I mean, that kind of thing that happens a lot, but mm-hmm. it's just knee-jerk.
Yeah.
But in the United States, there's nothing. We got nothing. Did we hear anybody in the last election speak mm-hmm. very often about Aboriginal issues?
Yeah, like maybe one time sometime when John McCain was back in Arizona.
Maybe. I do remember Obama saying, you know, my brothers and sisters, you know, this, that. And then he would have said, I'm not sure what he would have said now. Native American?
Possibly Native American.
You know, he would have said Black, white, Hispanic, Native American.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, he was, you know, that kind of reaching out.
Yeah.
But as far as like any kind of real political.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say they have so much more political clout. The influence is felt.
Not every single aspect of the universe, but in a lot of different aspects, there is just much more of a presence.
Absolutely.
You may not hear from them all the time, depending on where you are mm-hmm. or, you know, events that come up or don't come up, but the closer you are to reserves and where there's more of a population, you'll hear more every day. Mm. But at the very least, on every level of government, there's at least a presence, a thought of Aboriginal issues, and that they're there. Mm-hmm. Part of that, it's funny you bring that up because I'm planning to do an episode about this in the near future.
Yeah.
But part of it may have to do with, I mean, you can put it down to history and how people forget history, each country, but the history of Canadian, for want of a much better term, relations, Canadian Aboriginal relations with the people who showed up later, much of the terrible things that have happened have been more recent than what you hear about in history class in the U.S. It's more about mention it at all in U.S. history class in high school, it would be, you know, hush hush. But it would be that era.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you wouldn't hear anything about what any relations between the U.S. government and quote unquote American Indians during even the 1900s. I mean, except for the odd thing, it's not. While in Canada, those wounds are way fresher. We're talking about generation previous to
the residential school system.
Exactly.
There's a century.
So it's fresher.
But in the United States, imagine if whoever was elected president of the United States First Nations Congress, they're going to end up on the front page of the newspaper.
No one knows a thing about that, except in the specific, except in Arizona, New Mexico, places where people think all the American Indians are, when really they're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
While in Canada, there was just an election.
That's what I'm saying. That's
exactly. And that was a thing.
At least I knew Phil Fontaine for many years,
Exactly.
But in the United States, people would not know. But, I don't mean to bring this up at all, saying that we've done in Canada something that's right. Because I didn't know about racism as far as with First Nations people until I moved to Canada.
Uh-huh.
And I was very confused by that.
Yeah.
Because, I just started hearing, well, those people never wanted it. They seem to get everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of going, because this is a new and wonderful thing to me. And I'm thinking, wow, isn't this great? This whole other culture that's here, that was always here, that has an influence that I can learn from. And then I'm realizing that racism is rampant. And it's today. I mean, it doesn't matter about what happened in the residential schools. There still is, a huge amount of distrust or really this whole idea about they get everything, And I always say, would you like to switch places?
Yeah, no kidding. We were just talking a little bit about this earlier as well, but you said when you moved here, I'm not here. Jeez, now I did the here, too. When you moved to Canada,
we're
in our own little embassy here. This is Canadian territory at the moment.
It's true. We control this room.
When you moved to Canada, you felt kind of settled in. You felt kind of, I want to say more comfortable, but I'm using my term from my experience. And you said that, whatever you did say that you felt has only grown over the years, which is the same for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I have created a life. Mm-hmm. Before I left the United States, I didn't have a life, really.
Yeah.
I was very scattered, right? I had no roots, really. And so I really set down roots. And then there's the additional thing of finding out right after I moved here that my ancestors really were partly from Canada.
Yeah, that's there are other members of the family.
That has enhanced, my comfort zone in knowing that I am from here. There. Since we're not there right now.
Yeah.
I am from there. And in some ways that's kind of important in Canada. There's a little street cred there.
Yeah, you have a little some. Well, and now I have my street. I have my street cred.
Absolutely, that's what I'm saying. I'm
because
passing
as well,
the gauntlet.
Because
got some street cred.
Because as well, I
Cape Breton people.
Yeah, I have, and I didn't have a life for myself either because I was a teenager at the time. Yeah. I just moved there out of high school. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't developed a life in the mm-hmm. US at all. Mm-hmm. But it was my intention that my life would start there.
Yeah.
And so it did. But it stayed there. And yes, mm-hmm. it deepened and it grew. And part of the many aspects that are wondrous and bizarre and whatever about this story is that it came back around. Like I said, at another episode, when one of the first things that Mom said on that way home from Brantford, that someone was looking and this person was a dual citizen living in Canada. I said, that's it. 'Cause how could it not be? But now I know that not only is there this connection between you and I of being Canadian and of being dual citizens, But even further, there's this other connection from your family, and now mine, that is, in fact, Canadian. So things just sort of work out that way, I guess.
I know. Do you think they're up there pulling the strings? Somehow they make this all happen?
Yeah.
The old ancestors?
Ah, well, the way I believe these days is they're lurking among us, helping this happen. That they've been back once and twice again, possibly not even known. Well, definitely haven't known, but some undercurrent, like the river under, like Tattle Creek running under Toronto. You don't know it's there, and it hasn't been seen for ages, but it's been there. It's an undercurrent that remains no matter what you do. It's it's present. So we are now aware of that more than ever, and to know
we have always been connected. Now we just know about it.
And we just exactly. So thank you very much. If you have anything else to add on this subject, and I always have something to add. That's why I have a podcast about it.
It is your podcast.
But but thank you very much for sharing. Sharing your story and your experience, and although her sharing the story with me, the story only continues, and only I get to share it with you, and you get to share it with me. We get to share it together, and on it we'll go up there, and down here, and everywhere. So thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I think that'll do it for another episode of Description. It's a day later, my last day before my birth mother leaves on a plane out of Erie. And she's out in Lake Erie right now, swimming right on Walnut Beach. Right now she's floating on her back. She had to come and swim. And I'm here in my long jeans. But I do have my shoes and socks off. It's pretty awesome, huh? Yep. Kind of gotten that idea. The blog is descriptiontoronto.com. There won't be a whole lot of links, I don't think, this time, but there will be some and some other things I come up with writing about this. Email is descriptionto@gmail.com. Hosted by publicbroadcasting.ca. Please go there for lots of other great links and sites, and for the podcast NEXW, I think, Northeast, Midwest, something. So thank you for being in on this. I hope you enjoyed it, although it's fairly personal. But again, it's also kind of about citizenship in a way. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of this. I'm going to leave you with the sounds of the waves of Lake Erie on Walnut Beach in Ashtabula, Ohio, as my birth mother is out there swimming. Take care.
That, by the way, is my birth uncle.